Hi, this is Ken Arnold from the Night Watchman, and you are listening to Extra Features Podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of Extra Features Movie Review Podcast. My name is Kevin.
I'm Simon, looking for Bob still.
I'm Daniel, not finding Bob.
What about Bob?
I think I have a lead. I think he's at Burger King, being a Burger King greeter, but he hasn't realized Burger King doesn't need greeters yet, so.
I think he's the guy wearing the King mask.
You know what? Maybe that's it.
On the street, saying, come on and get a deal.
I think that's him, handing out flyers.
How do you think his turning skills are? Like the big sign?
I guess if he walked around the block, it would be fine. I think that would work.
He's the only king guy that has to sit in a chair.
Yes. Oh, he is the king. He could have a throne.
That's true.
You never know.
Like, well, maybe a throne of wheels?
Maybe.
Ooh. And he can still go around the block that way, right?
I think you're right. I think that would work.
I don't think he's been around the block for a while.
Yeah, I don't think he's made it to first base.
Oh.
He gets a walk once in a while, right?
Well,
first base.
I guess so.
I don't know.
If you consider first base with Chalet, maybe.
Oh, okay.
Chicken.
Chicken.
Okay, so let's talk about what we are supposed to be talking about, which is movies.
Oh, really?
I want to order for Chalet. Could I be back in a minute?
Simon, how are the other shows going? How are the interviews and stuff?
They're all percolating along nicely. I have a fascinating interview with the makers of a movie called Dirt, which is in the vein of Free Solo. Called Dirtbag. And we have another one based on a true story, a short film I did called Sylvia. It'll be up shortly, and the new Chad will be up this week, too.
Cool.
So that's going to be a busy week.
Well, I've been noticing we get a lot of traffic on the social media sites.
Well, they're all coming for you, Kevin. They love you.
No, they're coming for all these shows, all these interviews you're doing.
I'm trying. So let's go. Come on, we've got a busy week. Let's get
all
this
right, what's
up.
On the
We have first one up. Fat guy and one skinny guy up first.
Yes, Dan and Ollie. Starring Steve Coogan, John C. Reilly. Well, in a fat suit. Shirley Henderson, Nina Arienda, Rufus Jones, and Danny Huston. Who's Houston, sorry.
Oh, I thought it was you and Bob. Sorry, my mistake.
Okay.
Am I the smallest one here?
Yes. Well, I don't know. Probably not. So I thought this film was fascinating, absolutely fascinating. I mean, I do like Stan and Oliver films. I've watched them forever since I was a kid. Didn't really know much about their later years, I guess, when this film was taking place.
Mm-hmm.
And just found it fascinating that nobody showed up at the beginning of this tour. Nobody came to see Lauren. Like, were they just nobodies?
Uh-huh.
When they started this tour, I felt bad for them. Like, this is Stan, Laurel, and Artie. I mean, this wouldn't happen in our days and age, I guess. It really didn't happen until Danny Huston picked up their social media and told everybody, hey, these guys still exist.
Well, I mean, think of the time, though. So, 1950s, like, Laurel and Hardy had kind of, they were the silent movie comedians. They did do some sound pictures as well, but, I mean, really, they dominated in the 30s, but not so much in the 40s. So, you know, in between, we had the war. We had Abbott and Costello really became the big deal. Bing Crosby and Bob Hope, the Marx Brothers and other comedians. So there certainly was respect for them, but since Stan Laurel left his contract, Oliver Hardy was kind of rudderless, and they did one movie with a replacement comedian, which wasn't very well accepted, and they kind of addressed that at the beginning of the film. And he did star in a couple. He starred in a John Wayne picture as a bit player, and he did some other films, but he never really had successes without Stan, because Stan wrote all the material.
Yeah.
he was the comedic genius, but Laurel was a great performer. Hardy was a great performer. But so here is a chance for them to finally be reunited. So Stan has booked them to come to England to do a tour because he's got backing for a film as well that he thinks is being made, a Robin Hood movie. So that's the ruse to get Oliver Hardy over to England to do this tour.
Yeah, so I agree. I thought Steve Coogan is a chameleon, the way he becomes Stan Laurel.
Mm-hmm.
McGinty a little bit, but not as much. I mean, Coogan had me convinced he was Stan Laurel throughout this film.
Right.
And I
had this with Riley. I thought played perfect Oliver Hardy.
So there we go.
They captured the mannerisms and the eccentricities of both men perfectly.
And I mean, I did feel bad for them, but it does work out in the end. I mean, near the end, they do get popular.
Yeah.
And people like them. But I mean, I just thought it was fascinating how they need each other all the time. And Stan really says that.
Well, I think the director says in one of the extras on the DVD, he says, this is a love story. This is about two men who love each other. They're not sexually in love with each other, but they love each other. They're like brothers. They need each other to do what they want to do. And one did something which kind of drove a wedge between them. And this is them rediscovering that joy of working together and how they need each other. And so when something happens to Hardy that prevents him from, makes them at one point think he had to go home and quit, neither one knows what to do with each other. Their futures and their fates are so intertwined.
Oh, I'm with you 100%. I thought it was weird. Remember how they said they're never going to marry again?
Mm-hmm.
They both talk about that, and then when you meet them, they're both married again?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I thought that was quite funny. And I mean, what's up with Stan's wife?
Moaning Myrtle. Oh, not Olga.
Olga, what a miserable woman.
I don't know. She seemed to play a role. She was part of Hollywood. I think she supported him in a lot of ways.
She wanted him to get rid of Hardy, though. I definitely felt she was trying to.
Maybe.
And Moaning Myrtle just wanted Oliver to go home all the time. She keeps saying that.
Right.
But I don't know. I thought I loved the dance sequence. I thought the jokes were hysterical. They're sketch comedy.
But I liked how they work in their greatest hits in the film itself. In the story of the film, they would throw in those things. Right? So, like, the trunk falling down the stairs.
Well, that was funny.
You need that, little bits. And when they go to the hotel and Stan messes with a bunch of stuff on the counter and stuff, and he says, "Are you done now?"
Yes.
It's classic. It's not a fast-moving film. It's very, simple times, simple comedy, but it works.
Yes.
And that performances are fantastic.
I agree.
And I think Laurel and Hardy, I wondered what a person, I'd be curious to see what Daniel, when he eventually sees it, thinks of this, because I think you and I both grew up in a time when Oliver and Hardy were on television.
Yes.
They television in the 70s, they were constantly digging up whatever they could, because they needed content. And so they went back to Little Rascals, Oliver and Hardy, Abbott and Costello, Marx Brothers. All that stuff was on a regular rotation. And I think once you get to the 80s, that stuff starts to fade away, and there's enough shitty cartoons on that we don't get to see it. And then nowadays, I mean, no kid growing up would ever have any exposure to Oliver and Hardy in any capacity. It's definitely an old time thing. But to me, like, Oliver and Hardy were like huge.
Yes.
All their short films, knew all their routines. Like, they were a big deal. And to
I haven't heard of them.
So, yeah, I know what I mean. I think that I think there's a disconnect for people born after a certain time. There's no exposure. So there's no context for what this film means. I think you'd probably watch it. I mean, I'm curious to see when you do see it, what you think of it. It's just, to me, I had a personal connection to them, because I knew who they were and I knew their past. And I wonder how someone who doesn't know them would react to seeing this film.
Yeah, I just know their names, and I know that Steve Coogan and John C. Reilly's in it. I haven't seen the trailer, so I'm really...
Maybe the hope is, too, that once you see it, you might say, you know, I think I want to go and see some original Laurel and Hardy.
All I know about them is editing, or looking at some of Simon's tweets about their movies.
Mm-hmm. I think they're geniuses. Absolute comic geniuses. So do I do Alvin Costello, too.
Mm-hmm.
I just think, Daniel, that sometimes that to appreciate film, you need to watch these guys.
Okay.
Because the comedy is brilliant. You've got to remember, yeah. I mean, they're the first, it's just brilliant. You don't see it nowadays. It's a totally different style of filmmaking now. Pacing's different. These were simple films, always simple films with them. They're not depth films, but they're brilliant. Comedy just works. And I even like the postscript on this and how he continued to work on 7 more years and he was alive, worked on more skits for them just because he had to.
Well, the other thing that I really took a message out is that the toll of obesity and how it affected Oliver Hardy with his heart condition and his bad knees and things like that and how he was in declining health.
Oh, yeah.
And this tour was really his hurrah, and although he did do a few performances in the U.S. on television, he didn't. I think he died in 56. And so, but Stan Laurel went on, and he continued writing.
Yep.
Writing for them, but he also wrote for a lot of the big shows of the time. He wrote comedy routines.
I can believe it.
And he died in the mid-60s.
Yes.
Last 10 years or so. So, but just fascinating. And you know what? I'm really, it was a shame that this film did not get more recognition in the awards season. I think it did get a Golden Globe nom, but the Oscars completely snubbed it.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it was going to get a Best Picture nod. I think Coogan might have had a shot at leading man.
And Riley could both have been nominated for the film. I mean, really, their performances as Laurel and Hardy are chameleon-like.
Yes. Okay.
They impact the roles.
Would you recommend watching one of their movies before this to see that?
No.
Like them going to
You're fine. You're totally good. They'll touch on everything you need to touch
You're
on.
Fine. What would be interesting to see is if it makes you want to see their movies.
That's right. Okay. That's what we want to hear.
Yeah.
This is like an advertisement for it.
Yep, absolutely.
Yeah, I've watched some, like, Abbott and Costello sketches, but I've never watched, like, feature length, I guess.
Abbott and Costello were more, like, verbal humor?
Slapstick, I would say.
Like, okay.
They do a lot of gags at Costello's walking into doors, getting hit in his head with vases. Monsters chase them. It's a totally different style of comedy.
They're the Who's on First, right?
Or yes, that's them.
Okay.
Watching both these, I think they're fascinating.
It's a bit of physical and a little bit of verbal.
Okay.
It's always it's kind of like Three's Company. Like, there's always some kind of a misunderstanding.
Yes.
That happens.
Okay.
So you do this and I'll do that, and then Laurel doesn't do what he's supposed to do, and something's wrong, and then he usually tries to hide the fact that he did something wrong, and then it makes it worse, and then it's funny, and then it's like, but usually what he does is self-motivated too.
Okay.
like, oh, I'm sick in the hospital. What did you bring me? Well, I brought you some boiled eggs and nuts. Well, I don't eat boiled eggs and nuts. Oh, I'm sorry. And he sits there and he starts making faces. He says, do you want to eat the boiled eggs and nuts? Yes, I would. And then he starts eating them, and then he's making loud noises, and he's crunching, and he says, have you done enough? I'm trying to rest. You're driving me crazy with the crunching and all that stuff. You know, just that kind of humor, and then just little bits and their faces and their reactions. And
okay. That sounds funny.
It's brilliant. Yeah. It's really well done. Really well written.
Yeah. Okay. Cool.
Okay, I guess we should move along. We've got a lot to go.
All right. Instant Family, starring Mark Wahlberg, Rose Byrne, Isabella Moner, Gustavo Escobar, Juliana Gomez, Octavia Spencer, Tig Notaro, and Margot Martindale.
Just got to stick Margot Martindale in there.
Sure. Did you want to go ahead with this one?
Sure, I can go ahead. Right. As soon as I saw Mark Wahlberg, I'm like, really? Another Mark Wahlberg true story movie? I really need this in my life? This is going to be terrible. I couldn't have been more wrong. I laughed and laughed and laughed. I thought this film worked. I was shocked how much I liked it. I thought Rose Byrne was terrible, but I'm not a big Rose Byrne fan. She's just more and more blah. But the jokes just keep on coming. And they work. And I mean, it's not a nice thing that the kids have to go through. They want to adopt kids and this and that. I felt bad for them. You know, the kids, but it works on all levels. They keep trying things out. It has sadness in it. It has joyous periods. And the film works because the comedy is so strong. And Margaret Martindale just comes in and steals this film for part of it.
Yeah, she was good. I like Rose Byrne too, though. I like her.
Yeah, it's kind of like Rose Byrne, the usual Rose Byrne.
Yeah, playing herself, I guess. Can't really remember her performance, though. But I thought, the comedy worked. All the emotional beats hit. I was surprised, like, I was actually, like, emotionally invested in this. And it was interesting that it's, like, Sean Anders' experience, the guy who directs it. I thought that was cool.
Wait, is this his director's experience?
Yeah, this is, he fostered three kids, or he fostered some kids, I forget exactly, but he based it on him, like, his story.
Oh, come on, nothing's good as potato chip.
What?
That kid, good. What did you call your doll? Potato chips.
Oh, my God, I forgot. Man, I saw this in January.
And so what do you want to eat? Like, I just want to eat potato chips.
Oh, right.
It goes nuts. Man,
that she freaks out. Yeah,
and every time the kid gets in trouble, I'm sorry. Just like.
Yeah, the kids are great.
I think it works more. I mean, maybe on my level because I have kids. I related, but. The jokes just kept on coming.
Isabella Moner was great, too.
Yes. Is that the place really Maggie?
Yeah, she's the oldest daughter.
Yeah, I thought she did a really good job.
Yeah, she's from Transport. I think she's the new Dora, right?
Oh, I wouldn't know. Sure.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I can see that.
Yeah, she's going to be the new one. Yeah, it was. I really liked it. The only part that I was uncomfortable... before that, it's an important movie, though, about, like, foster. Like, I think it's fostering. I think it's realistic, and it's a good movie for that. But the part I was just thought was really awkward was Joan Cusack's cameo.
Oh, bizarre.
That's the weirdest cameo I've seen in my entire life. Like, when she's asking for a hug, and it's like, I'm just like, why are you here? You can leave now.
I did it also maybe one minor nitpick. Remember when Maggie has the cell phone and they say, you can't take my cell phone away from me?
Yeah.
Who's paying that bill? Who is paying her? So cut that thing off. That'll solve half your problems right there.
Yeah, she doesn't have a job, eh? That's fair.
I was kind of like...
I guess since you're a parent, you'll notice that, right?
Who would not cut off? I would have that cell phone cut off. Fine, pay your own bill. Fine. You don't want to talk to me? Fine. Pay your own bill. I don't care.
Yeah, fair. Because, they take it away, but they're still paying it, right?
Yeah. And I like the bear thing. I thought the bear joke was great. Every time you go to parent court, you get a bear.
Oh, right. Yeah.
And the guy's dumping 50 bears into the toilet box.
I thought that was... I thought it's humor to it, but I thought it was more sad that they have to go through that so many times.
Yeah, but I think the kids are used to it, but they make it funny, which it shouldn't have been a funny scene. But they go back to it later when they go back to court. Did you guys get a bear? Oh, that's a nice bear. Oh, with a judge. I was dying. I'm like, they're pounding this bear joke, and it works.
Yeah, true. And is that the, like, Tig Notaro and Octavia Spencer, they work too as the social workers? Or
yeah, the good cop, bad cop social workers?
Yeah.
And the white woman trying to adopt a black kid?
Yeah.
So she could have a basketball kid? Oh, my God, I was dying.
Oh, right. What's her... She's a comedian.
And the group therapy was hysterical.
Oh, I forget her name. Yeah. Yeah, that's... I forgot all about the... I actually have to... I actually want to watch this again.
I like I said, I would give this a strong recommend. It's funny, made me laugh, and it was much better than I thought it would be.
One sec, I want to find out what that comedian's name was. Because you saw her in Montreal, right?
I saw this last week.
Oh, no, sorry, the comedian...
Tig Notaro, I saw. I don't know who the blonde is.
Yeah, the blonde. She's like the blind side character. Eliza Schlesinger.
Oh, my God. That was her?
Yeah.
I totally didn't recognize her. Yeah, I've met Eliza Schlesinger a few times. She's a funny lady.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, no, it's a good recommend. Yeah, there's a cringy Joan Cusack cameo, but that's about it.
That is pretty cringy. That should be up for the cringiest cameo of the year.
Yeah, that was just the most bizarre thing I've seen. It's like, wait, what are you doing here? And why are you doing this? And so sometimes I think some of the humor was a bit awkward that they kind of tried to shoo her in. Yes. Maybe that was just Sean Anders' sense of humor. But
cameo did not work in any way.
No. It was just bizarre cinema. It's just, I mean, like, I don't think it made the emotional beat suffer, but I think it was just a bit distracting to the scene.
Hey, Octavia Spencer likes her pie. That's all I learned.
True. And it's probably poop pie.
Who knows?
Do you ever see The Help?
Yeah, of course I saw The Help.
Oh, yeah, true.
Rookie.
Yeah. Shit. Wait. Call me a rookie. Wait.
Should we get Kevin back?
What?
Oh, he's still there. Are we moving along?
Yeah,
there's no way we're getting 9 movies in, but okay.
No, okay. Let's go to Beautiful Boy Nun.
Okay.
Starring Steve Carell, Timothy Chalamet, Maura Tierney, Jack Dylan Grazer, and Amy Forsyth.
I think me and you had the same experience with this film, Dan.
Yeah, could you leave this? Because I saw it in November.
I can leave it. Kevin, it's about a boy being on drugs. Like, he's a smart kid. He gets dead. He gets hooked on drugs. And his parents are trying to get him to go to rehab. And it's just one of those stories.
Uh-huh.
You know, and his dad wants more for him and this and that. And it's basically, I think it's based on a true story, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, and it's the shared memoirs from the dad and the son.
And they just go through the dad, and it's just dull. It's nothing, you've seen the story 100 times. You know, just that it's a little bit higher. It's got Steve Carell, it's got Timmy Chalamet. It goes through the motions. You know, the parents are divorced, they're remarried, so hangs out with the dad. The dad really tries to help. It doesn't work out. So he goes to hang out with the mom, and the mom pretty much lets him do what he wants.
All right, Amy Ryan.
So he gets hooked on drugs again. And then the mom gives up, and then he tries to go back to the dad. It's just like slow-moving nonsense, I thought. I just didn't care. And at the end, it has a postscript saying how many people are on drugs and you need to get help, and I just didn't care.
Okay, so yeah, no, we did have a different experience. I did like the characters.
Couldn't care less.
Okay. It was slow, yeah. I mean, it's by the numbers, but I thought it was well-acted, and I thought – it was raw at times, and I think it did a better job at showing the experience more so than something like Ben Is Back, which we'll be talking about soon.
I think it definitely shows more of the experience of being on drugs than Ben Is Back, but I don't think it provided anything new. I've seen this film before. Okay. And of course, you're going to ask me to name something I can't off the top of my head, but I know I've seen this film. I just did nothing for me. I absolutely had no interest in any of it.
Okay. Yeah, each your own.
I wanted can we spoil the ending?
Sorry?
Can we talk about the ending?
Yeah.
That he comes home to dad and, you know, he's off drugs finally. I just wanted him to die.
You wanted him to die?
I was so done with him. I'm like, can he just OD and be done with
him? He's a real person.
I know that.
You're a monster, Simon.
I am, but I mean, it's a fictional movie. I mean, it's based on, they can change the ending.
Why would they make him die, though? Because
I wanted him to. It would have been a better movie. Maybe explain the situation better. Him living because he wanted to be with his dad, and he loves his dad, and I think it's a load of crap. Every time his dad helped him, he smacked him in the face continuously. So this is a movie about people can change in the end? Well, my argument is don't do drugs, and you'll be fine.
But it's all behavioral, or, like, just sometimes it gets in, yeah, I don't know. It's harder just to change like that, I guess. The one thing I liked about this, I liked the everything that they did. Like that little thing that they had.
Yeah.
That they say to each other. I don't know. I thought it was well acted. I mean, yeah, it was definitely slow at parts.
I thought Steve Carell did a great job.
It's a slow. Sorry?
I think anybody could have played the Timothée Chalamet part. I don't think he added anything to it. I thought Carell was excellent as a dad. I did enjoy Maura Tierney for the few scenes she was in. Amy Ryan was just sort of there.
Yeah.
I don't think she had a lot to do.
I really like the scene with Tierney when she chases them in the car and then breaks down. That was really good.
Yes. Well, I think that's Tierney's moment to say, because, I mean, at one point we don't know if Tierney cares. We get the feeling she doesn't care about him. Because that's not her kid.
I don't think I got the sense that she didn't care. I just think I got the sense that, it's not my kid. Maybe I'll stay out of, like, he's my kid, but he's not. So, maybe I just don't know the situation as well, I guess.
I think at one point she didn't want to think, and then that scene made her endear me to me that she did care. I was getting the feeling she didn't care at one point.
Okay, fair enough.
And I thought it brought it back. But again, I can't tell somebody to watch this film. I just don't think it's anything interesting. Read a wiki page on it. It'd be much faster and quicker.
Maybe read the memoirs.
Yeah, maybe if you're interested, but not for me.
Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, I actually do think, I remember like thinking it was a slog, but it's like, I think it's better than Ben Is Back, which we might as well just talk about now.
I figured we were going to do that. That's fine.
Yeah, it's because it's Addiction 2018. Yes. Ben Is Back, starring Lucas Hedges, Julia Roberts, Catherine Newton, Courtney B. Vance, and Rachel Bay Jones. I could take this one away. See, I know what rating you gave it, and the storyline's really dumb. It's just like a mom's love, I guess, trying to get her son back on track, and sometimes, like, her blaming people was really misplaced. Like, I thought the scene when she told off the dementia doctor, was like, I want you to die a slow, painful death. I thought that was a bit over the top.
I disagree. I think any mom would have done that in that situation, because she believes he's the cause of the problem, even though he isn't.
Because he would have got hooked at one point anyway.
I agree, but the mom doesn't think that way. She's mad.
Okay. I don't know. I just thought that was like, ooh. I don't know. I didn't like that moment.
Okay.
That's my perspective from not being a parent. I don't know if I'd be looking for someone to blame, but.
You would be. I think everybody, she doesn't want to think it's her fault.
Okay.
And she doesn't want to think it's her son's fault.
Which it is.
She's looking for someone to blame. And I think you see that throughout the film, that she's looking for someone to blame. Whether it be the drug dealer, whether it be the teacher he bought drugs off of.
Now, I want to... Did he buy the drugs, or was that a sex thing?
I thought it was a drug thing.
No, it was a drug thing, because like, he had like the... I forget what drug it was. Oxy?
Yeah.
And he had an end of supply. If you say there was an arrangement, that's a sex thing, right?
Well, it could be. Yeah, maybe.
I don't know. I wasn't sure what vibe to get there, because she like, I think she would be mad, because it's like, okay, he's taken advantage of his authority as a teacher to sell my son, give my son drugs. But I think her puking is like, oh, okay, it's a sex thing.
I don't know, but okay.
I don't know.
Are we going to discuss the weird turn this film takes?
Oh, when it turns into John Wick and...
Yeah, when it turns into John Wick and it's the search for the lost dog.
See, I thought taking the dog hostage, I think that's collateral. But yeah, it's thankfully Madison, like, you get out there and you find your fucking dog.
The guy breaks into the house to steal a dog?
Yeah, and not the valuable. I mean, I guess, like, he wouldn't come looking for the valuables, but I guess that's his way. Like, all right, this is a living thing. You're going
to
need
to get thing. Ben back to run drugs after so many years?
Yeah, I guess he's Clayton's just,
Really? He couldn't find asshole. Some other stooge to run his drugs?
Yeah, I think he just has a vendetta when he's like, oh, you're my guy. And then that one, Spencer or whatever says, oh, once you run for Clayton, you don't really get out.
Okay, they can put all the lines they want here, this and that, but I'm like, ridiculous.
Yeah.
I felt it was hand-feeding me throughout the film. Okay, the doctor got him on drugs. If it wasn't the doctor, it was the teacher. It's never Ben's fault. And when Ben tried to get off drugs, the drug runner took him over and made him deliver drugs. Yeah. Ben takes no responsibility for himself till the end.
And then...
At that point, I'm watching him steal his mom's car, do a drug deal, and then run around and get the dog back and then kill himself.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, the ending was weird.
Who cared? I'm so happy. I'm like, fine, film's over.
Yeah. I was like, because I like the performances a lot. Julie Roberts was good. Lucas Hedges was good. Courtney B. Vance was good for what he was. And I really liked that scene with, like, Catherine Newton singing in the choir. I thought that was a good one.
I thought everybody did a good job, but that weird dog storyline just, that was a game over for me.
I guess, it could have taken a different direction, maybe something less silly, I guess.
It was silly. I mean, they're starting this hardcore drug movie. I thought Julia Roberts would spend the day with her son and, you know, see where it goes.
Yeah, it's definitely.
But it's not about that. It's about her trying to find out how he got on drugs. And then him going to look for the lost dog. I just, retarded storytelling. It makes no sense.
Definitely Beautiful Boy was, better in realism. And this is more, feels more fiction. With like, but I mean, I guess it goes with the thing, like even, because they assume that he would steal shit again. And kind of, blame him for Bob's here. Blame him for the dog, but yeah, it's a little bit silly at times. But yeah, performances were good. I wouldn't watch it again, but I might watch Beautiful Boy
because
I like the performances a lot. More.
No,
but probably not. It was kind of boring.
You're not watching Beautiful Boy.
No, yeah, I mean it was fine. Bedazak was fine. I thought the subplot with, like, the girl that he got hooked and then she OD'd was interesting. But
yeah, didn't care.
Okay, fair enough. All right, hey, Bob.
Hey.
Welcome to the show, Bob. Nice of you to make it up. How was dressing up in the Burger King suit today?
Whatever.
Okay, so it went well. What are we moving on to?
We're at Boy Erased. Starring Lucas Hedges.
Bob, Kevin, did you see this one?
What?
Did you see this one, Bob or Kevin?
Yes. Is that with Julia Roberts and Lucas Hedges?
No, we just finished that one.
That was the one we just did, Ben is Back.
Oh, and what are you doing now?
Did you want to chime in on Bennett's back?
On which one?
The Julia Roberts, Lucas Hedges one.
The one you just did.
Yeah, we just discussed it. Did you want to do like a?
Well, I thought Simon didn't care. I thought I just heard him say that. I just thought it was well done.
Okay.
Well directed, and like the subject matter was powerful, and Julia Roberts did a really good job in portraying the character she was portraying, and so did Lucas Hedges. I thought.
Okay, we'll go to Boy Race, sorry. Boy Race starring Lucas Hedges, Joel Edgerton, who also writes and directs, or adapts and directs, Nicole Kidman, Russell Crowe, Troy Sivan, and Xavier Dolan.
Okay, continue.
That's it for cast.
Okay, who wants to start? Start.
Any of us.
Oh, okay. It's the subject matter is very challenging, and I think it does a good job of like not really giving you a sense of what year it is, because the practice of conversion camps or conversion therapy, sorry, seems so medieval that it could be happening in the 1980s, but it's still happening today, and this takes place in 2004. It's challenging subject material and trying to convert Lucas Hedges' character, who is gay, into changing because of his preacher father or pastor in like rural Arkansas. So, and he's not having it, and he says that he seeks the counsel of like smarter men, and they suggest putting him in this conversion therapy. The drama was good. Lucas Hedges, again, he's good in this, like he is in Bennett's Back. But this is, like, a more well-rounded character, I think.
Oops, Bennett's Back is the one I saw. Sorry, never mind.
Oh, no, you're good. Nicole Kidman's good at the mom. Good as the mom. Joel Edgerton's really good, too, as the counselor. We didn't really know I don't think we knew the supporting characters well enough, like the ones that he's in the therapy with. We get like a sense of Cameron and the character played by Troy Sivan, and I was kind of confused by Xavier Dolan's John, though. I don't know. I wouldn't watch it again, but it was good.
Oh, come on, Daniel.
Babbling. You go.
How could you say this was good?
It portrayed the drama well.
Good.
And what it was going for.
I think it works well what it was going for. I did enjoy the, oh my God, I'm losing it. Kidman's scenes with Lucas Hedges were excellent.
Yeah.
I really just thought this film was kind of silly. I mean, if this is real conversion therapy, this is the dumbest thing I've ever seen in my life. I felt bad because all these people didn't want to be there.
No, like, unethical.
He was telling them, this is what you gotta do, but I felt bad for them. Like, why are you doing this? Why would anybody do this to somebody? Because it's against God? Really? That's ridiculous. Yeah. It's just nonsense. I felt bad that these people can't be who they want to be. I thought the therapy was pointless and boring. I thought Joel Edgerton has no sense of directorial style. And I just wished it was never made. It just didn't interest me in any way. I'm glad he got away at the end and said, I'm not going back. Like, they did tell him you can leave at any time. He tries to leave and they're blocking him. I thought that was weird.
Well, they're like, oh, you're gay. We don't want you to leave. We want you to be straight and not go against God. I don't know. But I thought it was like, It's a challenging topic because it's still legal to do in 36 states, right?
Which is absolutely asinine that it's legal to do.
Because it's a fucking medieval practice. Like, exactly. They can be who they want to be.
And I like the postscript. Yeah, and then we found the guy running the thing was gay, too.
I was like, wow, I didn't see that coming.
Yeah, I didn't, but I just felt bad. But I'm really glad that Lucas Hedges, like, escaped this cult, a sense of cultism. And figured out, hey, I'm gay, I'm going to be gay, and this is what I want to be, and I think that's great.
Yeah, and, like, just standing up to his dad, and I thought There was a lot of good drama moments here.
I did think
it was good.
Would like to see a good director take this film on. I think we would have had much better shots, maybe something different. I found all the shots stagnant, consistently.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I know, I thought Joel Edgerton did a good job writing and directing it. Right. I mean, there's not a huge directorial style, but I thought he did a good job adapting the source material.
Yeah, okay. If you think so, I'll give it to you. Fine. I'm not going to argue it. I just didn't enjoy the film.
No, I'm not trying to argue with you. I just thought the writing was good.
Okay, where are we going to next? Fahrenheit 9/11? 11/9?
No, London Fields.
Okay.
Starring Amber Heard, Billy Bob Thornton, Jim Sturgis, Theo James, Cara Delevingne, Jason Isaacs, Johnny Depp? Jamie Alexander. What dates a movie more than Johnny Depp and Amber Heard being in the same fucking movie?
That wasn't the problem with this film.
No, I'm not saying that was, but it just dates it and it's uncomfortable.
Okay, but I mean, if you didn't know who Johnny Depp was and Amber Heard and you're a 13-year-old girl watching this film.
What do you mean? I know who they are.
Yeah, but
I'm just saying it's uncomfortable and it dates it.
Okay, but what dates it is this editing? Who edited this piece of junk?
Well, I did. I'm a 6-year-old, and I use Microsoft Editor.
Because I think that's what I watched. This film makes no sense to me ever.
No, it doesn't.
Like, I'm so confused halfway through the film. I'm like, am I rooting for the writer who I don't know why he's writing, other than Amber Heard's his muse, and he likes her story, so he's going to write that story. Okay, I got that.
I want to write a murder mystery.
And then Amber Heard couldn't act her way down a hallway with a paper bag as a prop. Okay. She is terrible.
Okay, she's bad in this?
She's bad in everything.
You can't tell me that. No, she's serviceable in Aquaman. She's good in Alpha Dog.
I've never seen Alpha Dog.
It's a good movie. But you can't tell me that if... Because Jamie Alexander in this as Theo James' wife is just as wooden. Like, her voice coming in and announcing, I'm going to take a nap. Cara Delevingne is just as bad. The script is terrible. Like, you can't tell me if they did Amber Heard's role, they would have been any better.
Yeah, but Amber Heard, all she does is flip her hair one side, flip her hair the other side. So is she more bright boob. I don't care, Amber Heard. You drive me nuts. You've yet to impress me in any film you've done. And this just shows me you stink.
But she's not the worst performer in this.
I think they're all bad.
And what was Jim Sturgis doing? Like a permanent Robert De Niro, are you talking to me face?
Who knows?
Honestly, I think Jim Sturgis acting in this was the worst thing I've ever seen in my life.
Well, he's overacting. I mean, Jim Walker.
Yeah. No, he's not overacting. He's chewing the scenery, puking it back out, and chewing it again.
I guess
on repeat. And we have a new most cringy dance scene. It's worse than Spider-Man 3.
No, it's not. Spider-Man Dance 3 still takes my game. Well,
I don't know. I had more cringe throughout the whole movie. I think this might be one of the worst I've ever seen. Like how I said, Life Itself, I would put that 10 times on my worst list. I think that I would put this 10 times on my worst list.
What did you think of the end of the film? Other than Hallelujah, it's over.
We'll spoil it because no one's seen this. So basically, Amber Heard's character, she's a clairvoyant femme fatale, and she knows when she's going to die.
Yes.
And I don't think she's clairvoyant at all. I think this is just a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yes.
Tells Billy Bob Thornton, this is where I'm going to die, and I just know that one of these people in this love triangle is going to kill me. And she's like, no, I can't run. Like, I'm just going to die anyway. Okay, so you told the guy that kills you that someone's going to kill you at this very spot.
Yes.
You're not clairvoyant. This is a self-fulfilling prophecy, and you could have run instead of getting in the car and being like, please don't kill me. Oh, my. It's a terrible, terrible movie. Like, Billy Bob Thornton's the only okay person, but he's more of a narrator than anything.
Correct.
And he's just playing himself, basically.
And he gets screwed in the end.
It's just, it doesn't make any sense. It's terrible.
I
agree.
I thought maybe you could explain it to me, because I'm still lost. I don't know why I watched.
I don't know what happened. And I don't know if it's like, commentary on literary, and then Jason Isaacs comes back, and he's not surprised that they're dead on the ground, and then he steals the book.
Yes.
And then he's calling, leaving voicemails all the time, like, flexing on them. Like, hey, I know you love my work. I know I'm more important than you. Like, I know you're envious of me. Yes. Like, easy, Malfoy.
Remember how when – it's Malfoy's dad, by the way.
No, I know.
My favorite part was when Kevin referred to on the last episode as network feeling like 4 hours. This to me felt like a 16-hour epic with bad editing.
Yo, I wanted, like, I've never, I don't know, like, everything about this is bad.
Everything.
There's no redeeming qualities.
I can't figure out what was going on half the time. Like, I'm so confused on the narrative.
It's based on a book that apparently is pretty good, but it just butchers it.
I hope the book is better, because I couldn't understand this. I really needed a director commentary to go, this is this character, this is this character, this is their motivations. This is what they're going to do. I'm like, oh, okay.
I didn't feel like it even had a director.
I think, really, no, it's direction. A bunch of short films they just edited together involving the same characters.
Honestly, I felt the same way. I just went scene to scene, and then there's a dart championship for some reason. And
no reason for the dart championship. We don't even need the Jim Sturgess character, really, other than being the muscle.
Just, yeah, and Theo James, he's such so boring.
No,
everything I've seen. I mean, he's fine in Divergent series, but no one's good in this movie. I mean, Billy Bob Thornton's maybe passable, but not really.
I'm with you, buddy.
Worst script ever, honestly.
I'm 100% on board.
Yeah, worst movie I've seen in a while.
Okay. All right.
Sorry. I get mad when you bring up Paddington 2, because I get mad at movies like this. So, like, if you ever want to bring that up when I'm mad at a movie, then I'll get mad. Okay, sorry. My bad, that was random. All right, one. What?
Yes, that was very random.
I don't know. I was just thinking about the last episode and when I was talking about The Wicker Man, and I was mad at the movie, and then you brought up Paddington 2.
I would never do that. That would be wrong.
All right, sorry. Netflix's The Dirt, starring Douglas Booth, Machine Gun Kelly, Ewan Rheon from Game of Thrones, Daniel Webber, Catherine Morris, Pete Davidson, David Costabile, Levin Rambin.
Right. Okay, I finally what a movie I saw.
Hey, Kevin's better.
Which is the Motley Crue story, based on their book about their exploits. And so it's a kind of a look back on the excess of rock and roll in the 80s. We definitely have seen lots of pictures of with the 70s and the 60s and what the rock scene was like. So here we get into, like, the heavy metal, hard rock scene of Los Angeles in the early 80s as Motley Crue comes together and slowly becomes, like, the biggest, one of the biggest names in hard rock and metal. And you know, it's definitely, you know, excess. But I never really got a sense of, like, the level of debauchery that, you know, these guys hit, which was apparently legendary, like Simon does. And, but yeah, it was good. My only problem was is that it kind of glosses over the worst stuff. Like the one guy is in a car accident and accidentally kills somebody else, and he goes to jail for a month.
19 days.
Yeah.
Because he was sober.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
No, and there's no sense of remorse over it.
None. Zero.
And the way that it treats people, I mean, these guys are basically just full of themselves and out to make money and party and satisfy their own needs over everybody else.
Yeah.
And then some of the stuff, the way that they turn to the audience and they say, well, it wasn't really like this, but for the sake of the movie, we're going to tell you it was this way. That was taken from another film that was sort of like that, another rockumentary. So it's not even, it's like they lifted stuff from other things to make this movie too. So yeah. I thought it was like a TV movie of the week.
Yes, I 100% agree.
And a bad one at that.
I mean, I guess I should speak. I'm probably the biggest Crew fan on the show. Like, I love Motley Crue's music. I knew they were a bunch of dicks, but I guess I never knew to this extreme. Like, I would never want to know these people. Like, right. Miserable. All of them.
Yeah.
Every one of them I would want to punch in the face.
Please. Can we line up and do it?
Like, what awful people to everybody in their lives.
Yeah.
Everybody. I mean, and then they tried to redeem Vince Neil by giving him that daughter story. I mean, I'm sorry his daughter died of cancer.
Yeah.
But he doesn't redeem himself to me ever.
No.
I mean, and Pete Davidson, that horrible wig, that was brutal.
And all the wigs are horrible.
I'm like, what is going on here? I think this film is just uninteresting. I mean, the best part's the Nikki Sixx. He had the only background that was kind of interesting.
Ooh, this is another drug addiction movie.
I mean, yeah, it's just all drugs. I mean, Tommy Lee's a dick. At least Nikki Sixx says, I respect women. At least I'll give him credit.
Uh-huh.
Vince Neil's just a jack-off that nobody would want to hang out with in high school anyway.
And then Mick only gets the bone subplot and not much else. He doesn't get a lot to do. He gets the least to do out of anyone.
I don't think he's the least interesting character.
You don't think he is?
I think he's got a horrible haircut. He has it forever. But, I mean, he's the one that kind of makes the band. He knows how to play and how to do this, how to do that.
Yeah, I thought there was only, like, a few decent scenes. Like, I thought like, the naming of Motley Crue was kind of funny. And, like, the ending when they're all, like, kind of like a Breakfast Club kind of ending.
Yes.
Just, like, we're Motley Crue, like, with, like, the Home Sweet Home, like, playing. I thought that was cool. But, well, like, I hated this, though. It's just debauchery for the sake of debauchery.
Absolutely.
And it's like it's by the director of Jackass. It's his first narrative feature, but it might as well be a Jackass movie.
Yep, feels like Jackass.
Yeah. Like I watched this as knowing barely anything about Motley Crue except for Home Sweet Home, and that they turn into Motley Blue at the end of Todd's Up Time Machine. Like that's literally all I knew about them.
Well, I knew all the songs, like every song, there was nothing there. I didn't know. I thought that there was one funny scene when the guy that gets them all the drugs, their tour manager, got Theater of Death or whatever the tattoo said.
The tattoo.
And he changed it. He goes, oh, just so you know, we changed it to Theater of Pain.
Yeah.
But I think it's just a band that had more potential than they ever showed.
Yeah.
Like they should still be going with new albums and stuff. I think they had that potential, but I just think they became such dicks and drug heads. They just couldn't go, and they all go become clean. Okay, I just didn't care. I just thought there wasn't enough depth to tell the story, and it looked like a movie of the week.
When they got clean, they got boring.
Yeah.
And I think Vance was mad about that. The one scene I liked seeing Ozzy. That was kind of funny, but then it quickly wore off. Like, the drinking, like, licking the piss off the ground was like, what the fuck is going on?
When he starts snorting ants and stuff like that, okay.
Yeah.
And then he's licking piss, and then you're like.
And then he licks his piss?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow, I really didn't need to know that about Ozzy.
No, and, like, there's, like, missed opportunities here. Like, you're telling me that Tommy Lee actually went around in a spinning cage, and you're only going to show me a stupid POV shot when he's going through a day of the life of the band?
Actually, he really does do that. That's
like, I wanted more of that. There wasn't, like, any good, like, band scene.
There was no good concert footage, no. It was just, like, quick shots, maybe a minute and a half, and out.
Yeah, I don't like Bohemian Rhapsody, but this needed, like, a Live Aid scene, like, or something. Something that's good.
It needs somebody to know how to put a wig on somebody and fix it properly.
That's true. Oh, and, like, the editing near the end, like, the last 30 minutes was just terrible editing. Like, how it went from, like, Pete Davidson trying to act, like, telling him that, like, oh, the music is yours now, going right to Vince's dead daughter.
Yes, like, nice you're editing.
You're giving me all this, like, exposition-y thing, like, oh, like, emotional manipulation and being like, Daddy, like, when are they going to take the flower out of my tummy? And then you're not going to give, like, you could do, like, a little 30-second, okay, goodbye, daughter, and instead you're just going to show me her dead body and them crying around her? I don't know. Sorry.
Does anybody know this girl? I mean, we know the girl's name, but does anybody know which? I mean, because Vince even says at this point, oh, I got a girl pregnant. What? And they, that relationship's barely touched on. And I agree with Kevin. When he kills that guy in the car, it's just kind of like, okay. And then moves along quickly.
Yeah, get me out of jail so I could do more drugs.
Yeah.
Bobby, see this? And Bobby, did you see this one?
I didn't see it.
Okay. So this movie reminds me, you know, sometimes when you retell movie plots, this movie kind of reminded me of that.
Yes.
And it was basically, and then I went to the movies and I saw this, and then this happened. And then that. And I'm not making fun of you, but this is that movie. This is basically, and then we got together, and then we played some music, and then we did some drugs, and then we screwed some women, and then he got pregnant, and then he had a car crash, and then he had this, and that's the movie. And it's not like there's no connection to any of these characters at all. Like, basically, this happened, then that happened, then this happened, then happened, and then we're all sober, and that's where we are.
Yeah.
It's probably the book, too.
And they continued on for 20 more years. Okay.
Yeah.
It ends so abruptly with that, like, Breakfast Club tying it together. Like, we are family. We are Martley crew. Like, I thought it was like, okay, that's kind of cool. But
they're
also,
not
like,
family.
No, they're a bunch of assholes.
Yes. Complete and utter jack-offs, all of them.
Yeah.
Except for Nikki Sixx. I'll give Nikki Sixx credit.
I mean, the acting's fine, but nothing to write home. Well, I mean, I don't think Vince is very good. I don't know.
Vince was terrible.
No, yeah. Like him trying to, like, crying at the end, like, breaking down, like, because of his daughter. It's like, well, okay, you just can't really act. Sorry.
Well, there's a reason why this never made theaters. It's pretty evident. So.
The guy that ends up with Heather Locklear.
Oh, that's Tommy Lee, right?
Richie Sambora?
Oh, Machine Gun Kelly, yeah.
Whoever that actor was, I kind of liked him. He was okay.
Yeah, he's that rapper who did the diss track for Eminem.
Yes, that's Machine Gun Kelly.
Yeah.
And he goes, oh, man, I loved your work in The Fall Guy. No, that's Heather Thomas. That's
me. Yeah.
I thought it was kind of funny, but the rest of the movie was kind of crap.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, there's like a few maybe almost good scenes, but yeah, it's all pretty utter crap.
All right, Netflix, fail.
Fail.
Fail. Okay, we'll do the documentaries rather quickly because I don't know how much there is to talk about them. Anyway, Active Measures by Jack Bryan, starring Donald Trump and Vladimir Putin.
Basically, yes. And Paul Manafort and Roger Stone and a few people.
Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
Active Measures is basically, it's been a while since I saw this, but it's basically the active measures are the Russian policy. They're trying to basically put things in place to undermine democracies so that people don't have faith in the institutions of government. And basically the Russian philosophy is that life is shit. Don't care about the corruption. Don't care about that other stuff. Just go about your business and whatever and let us rip you off as much as possible. And then they basically outline the things that they did that would come into play. Like I'm watching that movie, I come out of that and I'm completely convinced that there's collusion and everything else. And then the Mueller report came out last week and Barr is saying there's nothing. And I'm like, no, that doesn't make sense. Like there's enough evidence to me that something was going on. But anyway, it made a compelling argument, essentially. And you could see the corruption with Paul Manafort as well. He was definitely someone that was, the reason he was there was because he was valuable to Putin.
Yes, 100%. I think this film does show a lot what Russia could do to an election. Yeah. I mean, obviously I didn't do any investigation of my own. If I take this film as word, then yeah, definitely there was some tampering by Russia.
Well, there's no, they've admitted it. They basically, Russians haven't admitted it. But there's enough evidence now that they do say that they interfered in the election. The question is, did the Trump campaign participate in that or not? Was Trump an asset or not?
I don't think he's smart enough to be an asset.
I think that they offered him stuff that he was willing to look the other way on certain things.
I could take that, sure.
And that's where the collusion and the conspiracy comes in. I think they just said, hey, you know what? If, you know, we know you want to build a building in Moscow and all that stuff, well, we could look the other way on certain things and let you have that if you ease off on sanctions.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. And I think that's, every opportunity Trump has had, he's eased up on sanctions on the Russians. And his argument is basically, oh, I think we should have good relationships with Russians. There's never a compelling reason other than, which looks very suspicious.
I have to agree with you. Yeah, I thought this film got a little preachy near the end. I was done. It was a little long for me.
Yeah.
Like, I found they kept rehashing the same thing over and over and over again. I'm like, hey, I got it.
Yeah.
But then they go back to their diagram showing everything goes back to the Russian crime boss.
Right.
Let's go back there again. Back there, okay, I got it. And, an hour and a half of this, I was fine. We're hitting the two-hour mark. I'm like, I'm done.
This is like something you put on, it's on Netflix or something, or YouTube, and you just put it on the background. You're like, okay, yeah, you made some good points. I know a little bit more about some things that happened in Europe. It gives me a little bit more perspective on some stuff that's going on in the U.S. But, yeah, okay, I've had about enough of this.
Yeah, I thought it was too long. I got it. It needs about a half an hour edit, and I think it would be fine. But, okay. I mean, by the end of the film, you guys decide. Either Russia did do it or they didn't do it. I think they did do it. I think it's pretty proven they did do it.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all I can say about it. I mean, if you're interested in it, watch it. And if you're not, then just accept Russia's going to play with your election.
Yeah, I'm not going to watch this.
And then Fahrenheit 11-9?
Yes, starring Michael Moore, starring Donald Trump.
Go ahead, Kevin.
It's all on YouTube. Someone put the whole movie up on YouTube.
Oh, really?
Yeah. I guess they're trying to not allow him to make money on it, but I watched it, and I don't know. I had the same experience. It was sort of like, okay, I get it. I completely get why Michael Moore doesn't like Donald Trump. I completely know why I don't like Donald Trump. And so together, he and I are in agreement. So it's just hours of basically reinforcing all the facts and the reasons for why Michael Moore and I don't like Donald Trump. Trump is a weak man, and he is pathetic, and he's definitely done a lot of stuff, and that is dodgy.
Yep.
And I don't think it's fair to say we should turn our back on it, and I think we should be aware that something's wrong here, and when given the opportunity, there should be something to course correct America, because they have to get away from this.
Okay, Michael Moore is like that dog to me that doesn't know if he wants to pee or not. He just goes on and on and on. And then when he's done with Trump, I'm like, okay, nope, we're going to go to Obama and go to Flint for a while.
I thought the Flint subplot was interesting.
That one I actually didn't mind. I thought the Flint was fascinating.
I liked it more than the Trump.
The Trump,
I thought. Just thinking maybe about Flint.
Yeah, I thought that was Tim. And then I'm like, okay, this has got to be over. Nope. Let's go to gun control. I'm like, oh, my God, Michael, enough. Enough preaching. I've had enough of Michael on his podium. It was like, enough, Michael. I got it. You're unhappy. You can't edit to save your life. I got it.
And it was crazy. He's on all the news programs talking about the same issue. So I already knew his perspective on everything.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I agree.
I thought he made, like, the points digestible, though, like that one guy that's, like, talking about, like, oh, Michael Moore has a way about, like, stringing clips together really well. I mean, it's kind of like putting a critic's voice in your own movie, but, I thought it was, this is actually the first Michael Moore movie that I've seen. I thought it was pretty interesting, but, Simon, when I was texting you last night, I was, like, an hour and a half in, and I just hit a wall where I wanted to stop paying attention.
I told you. Just get to the point. I'm done.
And I was I was like, it was an hour and a half. I was like, okay, if this is an hour and a half, I would be fine. I'd be fine with this. But it's 2 hours 7, and I was like, okay, 37 minutes left. When is this going to end?
Uh-huh.
Like, put me out of my misery?
Oh, I agree. Like, running time is too long.
I like the bit of it. I haven't seen a lot of documentaries, so. But I thought there was good points. I thought there were some interesting characters, like the NBA mom. Like, I thought that was, like, heartbreaking about how she's like, I should have just taken my mom to wherever. But she died because of the poisoned water.
Yeah, that was upsetting.
Yeah, and I thought the military guy was interesting, but then I just thought it kind of got off topic a lot. Like, it went to the teacher strikes and stuff, I don't know. I liked the Flint, Michigan subplot the most, and that was about it. And I liked the beginning, like the contrast between everyone happy that Hillary's going to get elected, and then everyone's so somber at Trump's camp, and then it's like, how the fuck did this happen?
Yeah.
Well, Michael Moore, I think, says you better watch out for him. He might win. It clearly states at the beginning.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I don't know.
And Trump thought he was going to win. You're right. It was like a funeral march.
Yes.
Oh shit, now we won. What do we do now?
I don't think he thought he was going to win. I really don't.
I didn't know that Gwen Stefani was like kind of on the cause of it. I was like, fuck Gwen Stefani and fuck NBC. Because Trump just wanted more money for the Broom Apprentice.
Yes. So blame Gwen Stefani. Yes, that was my
I thought
plan.
That was interesting. But, like, most of the interesting stuff happens in the first hour and a half, and then it's just Michael talking too long.
Okay. Did anybody buy anything this week? Do you have anything to talk about? Bob, you haven't been on much because you came late. Do you have anything to say?
No, nothing. I didn't buy anything.
That's upsetting. How's the new job going?
It's fine.
Okay.
Quickly, Mark Hamill is cast as Chucky's voice in the new Child's Play.
Yeah, I'm okay for it. He does a good job with animated stuff, so.
Yeah, that's exciting. That makes me, like, want to see it more. Before, I wasn't interested, but, I mean, like, I'd watch it, but, like, now I'm actually like, okay, this could be good.
Well, we'll find out. I've seen every Chucky movie, so I have no fear.
Chucky's going to sound like the Joker, basically.
That's what I'm thinking.
But that sounds awesome.
Okay, guys, wrap it up. We're running out of time.
All right.
Avengers Endgame tickets go on sale tomorrow.
And if they make it?
Simon watches it and I don't.
Fair enough. Goodbye, all. Good night.
To contact us, please email at extrafeatures@gmail.com and join us at our Facebook page.